From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for April 5th, 2024. The Brewers are home this weekend with Seattle, who are the original Brewers. And your Milwaukee Bucks have four home games between tonight and Wednesday. They'll be busy. And finally, the event of the weekend is Coffee and Donut Fest at Turner Hall this Sunday. The world is coming to an end. First, the solar eclipse this Monday. Darkness shall descend upon the land. Or it could just be another cloudy day. The people of Oklahoma have great seats for the solar eclipse. So great they've called out the National Guard to keep the peace. As many as 100,000 tourists will descend on just one county where the solar eclipse is directly overhead. But they're in Oklahoma. So what are they going to do the other 23 hours of the day? And that event will be followed by the dual cicada invasion, unlike anything we've seen in the last 200 years. The two swarms of cicadas are strange little buzzing insects who wake up loudly every 13 and 17 years. But this year, they're waking up all together by the hundreds of trillions. Some entomologists are calling it the Cicada Palooza, starring Lady Gaga. Others have taken to calling it the Pestilence Armageddon. I think that's a biblical term for we should all wear earplugs. A Filipino grocery store offered free groceries for a month if you would get the store name tattooed on your body. A young woman took them up on it and had the name tattooed on her forehead, only to find out it was an April Fool's joke.
Oh, no.
On the podcast today, we have Joel Dreesing, Adam Bailey, Steve Giles, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
And a tough week overall for the markets. The NASDAQ down 0.8% this week, 131 points, closing at the bell at 16,249. The S&P down 50 points this week, that's 1%, closing at 5204. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 2.3%, despite adding 307 points on Friday, down 903 for the week, closing at 38,904. For the year, NASDAQ up a still stellar 8.5%, the S&P up 9.5%, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 3.8%, all including dividends. Also on the week, the benchmark yield on the 10-year U.S. Treasury moving meaningfully higher, closing at 4.38% at the close of trading on Friday. And, you know, Joel, I think one of the reasons why the 10-year started to move a little bit higher again has to do with just how strong the economy has been. We got some very clear indicators on Friday that the labor market continues to show signs of strength.
Kyle, and it's a continuation of the strength that it's been showing before. The employers added 303,000 jobs in March. That was the 39th month in a row of gains. The unemployment rate went down to 3.8%. It's been below 4% at 4% or lower since the end of 2021. And that's the longest streak that it's been that low since 1965 to 1970. So especially on the labor front, the economy looks really strong.
Yeah, jobs numbers this week, surprisingly higher, 303,000 jobs created. Economists were expecting around 200,000, so a sizable jump over and above what economists were hoping for. On top of that, like you said, the unemployment rate ticked up a little bit, but still historically low. I actually got a question today from one of my clients saying, hey, Adam, how can that be when we create so many new jobs? Does the unemployment rate tick up? And I thought that was like an astute observation. But it also, it shows that the people who have come off the sidelines, who maybe have thought they were retired or just weren't going to work, they see higher wages, they see some good job prospects, and they're coming off the sidelines, they're getting back into the labor force. So that's how you can have a sizable jump in jobs numbers and a modest increase in the unemployment rate.
And to take that a step further, Adam, when you look at participation rates, we had a little bit of a pop in participation rates in the last month. And it's one reason why perhaps such a sizable jobs gain doesn't have what would normally be as significant of a wage growth component to it. Because if more people are looking, yeah, the unemployment rate went down just a touch. But if more people are looking, it's okay that you've filled more jobs because odds are you've got more workers now looking for it. And I know, Joel, one of the things that we point to, particularly in this jobs report, is just looking at the number of legal immigrants that are filling some of these roles.
That's right. I'm seeing more reports. I've been seeing them for months now from economists and being reported in all sorts of different publications about how legal immigration, that's opened up a little bit more the last couple of years, and that's provided more workers, especially at the lower end of the wages. And so you add those lower wages, and that's what keeps the average lower. And you know, this report that we had today on jobs said that year to year that the wage inflation rate is like 4.1%. That's the lowest that it's been since March of 2021. And it was down from 5.9% just 2 years ago. So, and a point that Adam always makes is that even though that wage inflation is coming down, which is a good thing for what the feds want to do with the interest rates, it's still higher than what the inflation rate is right now.
You're stealing my thunder, Joel.
I'm setting you up.
Yes, even at a wage gain of 4.1%, less than what has been in previous years, that's okay. It's still above inflation, and wages are rising faster than inflation. That bodes well for consumers because consumers still have more money in their pockets, even if it doesn't feel that way. In aggregate, that is the case. It also bodes well for businesses because if consumers have more money in their pockets, they can get out and spend and go on vacations or go on to restaurants and movie theaters and do home renovation projects and stuff like that. So it underscores some strength in the economy and consumers.
And I also think that it's worth pointing out that the jobs numbers, 303,000, was spread pretty broadly across the entire economy. You've got jobs in health and education. You've got jobs in government, leisure, hospitality, construction, retail. Really, the area that was kind of lagging was probably manufacturing. But this is a very broad-based jobs number, and I think it is a good sign as we continue into this year.
And I think it speaks to some of what Adam was saying as well, Steve, which is the strength of the consumer. And that strength has made its way into retail sales. It's made its way into all kinds of consumer-facing metrics. And something that we mentioned a couple of months back, which is maybe the one piece that serves as kind of the cautionary tale, is we've seen just some small cracks form here and there. Auto lending, great example. We've seen auto delinquencies creep up a little bit recently, especially for some of those lower quality loans that are out there. And then, Joel, we had numbers today, this afternoon, on increasing amounts of revolving debt, the kind of credit card spend that so many consumers rely on to kind of to keep some of those purchases going.
Don't take away my credit card.
Well, you don't have to because people aren't paying them back as much. So, and that was the point of the Federal Reserve report. They were saying that the amount of debt held in revolving credit or credit cards is up at a 10.2% annual rate between January and February, and that's relatively high. It averaged about 3.2% since 2000, and it's about 5.4% since 1990. So that's relatively high. And sometimes we look at those revolving debt numbers, and they show that consumers are confident in the economy and in their jobs, and that they know that they can use their credit card and pay it off. But sometimes it's a matter of people sort of, they're running out of cash that they can spend, so they just start borrowing more.
And it does not seem like this is the market in which consumers are running out of cash. And so I think there certainly is an element of maybe some wealth concentration and some lower earners that might be seeing some of that pain that we're talking about. But also, I think there's an element that despite the fact that the confidence surveys, the sentiment surveys don't always show maybe how strong the underlying data really is, at the end of the day, we're still seeing spending that correlates with consumers who actually do feel pretty confident with what's going on. And so I think, if anything, it's just an interesting period in general to watch because the data looks so different often between the underlying hard data and then some of the softer data on how people feel.
You know, this is an interesting segue into something else I know we want to talk about today, Kyle, and that's the concern that consumers continue to have with inflation and that the data continues to point to what is a recovering or recovered economy, or at least we didn't tip into this recession like everybody was predicting. And all the data suggests that we're doing much better than what people are actually feeling. And everybody's got this concern with inflation that they're still continuing to spend and swipe those credit cards in the face of what they perceive to be continued high costs.
It also gets back to what we were talking about last week with Daniel Kahneman, who recently passed away, who won the Nobel Prize for Economics, although he was a psychologist, and that's that people aren't necessarily rational. There was a great story in the Wall Street Journal that looked at where the economy is going, where jobs are going, where inflation is going, and compared it to popularity polls to, you know, what people are feeling about those things. And people are a lot sourer about all those things than the data say they should be.
And I think, you know, the funny thing about that is while the data itself maybe points to stronger economics, the data itself points to just stronger gains overall, and the consumers may be acting the other way. At the end of the day, they're not behaving the other way. They're still spending. And so when you look at kind of the end result, it's a market that's really benefited from that strength as well.
Yeah, I'm going to share a might be unpopular opinion, but a profitable one. You take a look at just the raw economic data, and it's decent. It's good. There's a fair amount of strength out there. Yet we feel glum or crummy. And I tell you what, I've made a lot of money in the past investing while people feel glum or crummy. It's usually a good time to put some cash to work and
I
invest.
You're gonna give
I'll
us
leave
the
that.
Powerball numbers. At.
Ask me after they roll, and I'll tell you. That's the point: is that when other people feel glum or crummy, that's usually a decent time to get some cash out and add to your account.
Yeah, so Warren Buffett buy when other people are selling.
Yeah, and of course, Adam, the last 25 weeks or so have been just a great example of exactly what you're talking about. That, yeah, it might not have felt great, and yet here we are much higher than we were.
Yeah, 21 out of 25 weeks, the past weeks, have been up weeks. That's a lot, and the market usually doesn't do that. Usually we have some down days and down weeks. This week was one of those down weeks. But just be ready for after what was a long sprint forward in the market, to just to pause and to catch our breath. That's normal. That's healthy. We're probably going to pause in between now and when earnings start to kick off here in a couple weeks.
I think such a great reminder that we are kind of adrift right now. We're in the middle of mostly just what the Fed is going to do and the occasional economic drip that's out there. And, you know, really earnings kick off. They've kicked off already for the first quarter, but they'll kick off in earnest next week and then really pick up in the following. And Steve, one of the things you and I were talking about before the podcast today is just how I think we sometimes need to keep our expectations in check. When you look at forecasts for first quarter earnings, we're talking about probably 5% earnings growth that corporations are kind of predicting. But when you look beyond just the next quarter, it's bordering on double-digit earnings growth going into this year and next. And so that's a pretty positive number all overall. And yet you've got some corporations now that maybe are saying, hey, things might not be quite as rosy as you think.
Yeah, it's actually the highest that it's been in about 5 years, Kyle, of the companies that have issued guidance this year on their earnings, which would be, as of today, 111, 79 have issued negative earnings guidance for the next year. Which, I mean, I think can be telling. There are companies out there that are basically saying, hey, you know, let's maybe take it one step at a time, and they don't want anyone to get out over the tips of their skis, I think would be the same.
And I think some of the issue is a lot of that earnings growth was tied to hopes of higher margins and falling inflation, and inflation's been a little more persistent than we hoped.
And lower interest rates.
And lower interest rates. Certainly, when your borrowing costs go down, it tends to help margins. And so I think if the expectation is that, yeah, sales might only grow 3% in the first quarter, but earnings were going to grow at 5%, well, your sales growth might only be 1.5, and your margins might not be as good as you thought they were going to be. Yeah. And so maybe
and the Fed's going to keep rates where they are.
You got it.
Yeah,
and so I think just a reminder that despite the optimism that's out there, despite how strong of a run it's been, you know, Adam's point, maybe we need to keep things in check a little bit is relevant.
I'll put some more context to this one. Current PE on the S&P 500 is about 21, 22 times future earnings, give or take. That's historically expensive, and a lot of these businesses are priced for perfection. But if they deliver any less than perfection, you can look out below. Just be ready for some volatility with stock prices high and earnings starting to roll in. If they roll in anything less than expectations, it'll create some turbulence temporarily.
So is this a classic example of under-promise and over-deliver?
It very well could be. We'll find out when earnings season really kicks off.
Just like those Powerball numbers, right? We'll know when we know. Well, I think that's probably a good place to end it. A reminder that long-term optimism is the right way to consider investing, because stocks on average go up. It's just a function of dealing with the volatility along the way. And so our job is to kind of keep things in perspective, keep you on the level, and that's all we're trying to do here. With that, we enjoy doing the program. We will talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.